Hey folks, and welcome to Dungeon Casters, the Dungeon Master Advice Show for Rookie DMs by Rookie DMs.
God damn it! I'm Ben. We got some stuff to say, but I'm Ben.
I'm Scott.
And we got a lot of stuff to talk about today.
We have a whole mess to talk about today, because today was going to be our last fucking episode.
This was execution day.
We were going to hang it up because things have been crazy with, like, work and, you know, life and paying $15 a month for a podcast that, like, we enjoy doing, but, you know, is just kind of, like, something for fun, wasn't really fiscally viable for us. And then, all of a sudden, like, we look at our email and we get two emails in the last, like, month or so that were super fucking awesome. We get our, like, first two iTunes reviews that are both 5 stars, and all of a sudden it's like, oh no, now we can't. Yeah. Now we can't
so
quit.
So Scott and I kept having this problem because, as I'm sure you all noticed, our productivity went through the toilet. Like, when we first started this, we were doing it, once a week, I think? Is it once a week?
Yeah, we were.
Once a week, right? But we knew that wasn't going to be sustainable because I was going away to school and my schedule was about to get really busy, and it did. But we were doing pretty good about doing, you know, once every 2 weeks, and we would sometimes record, like, 2 episodes, so we'd have a little bit of a backlog. But there was this building problem with it that, like, my internet was never very reliable. And Scott, recently, when did you move, Scott, into the new place? How long have you been there?
Like, 5 months
ago. So, like, 5 months ago, Scott moved to a new place, and I don't know that his internet is as good as it used to be. And so we kept having these problems of our internet would drop out mid-conversation. Scott was having a hell of a time doing the editing because there would be these, like, weird gaps where, like, it would cave out, and then it would, like, junk up the sound, and it wasn't good, and it was, like, a big pain. And then
I'm gonna tell you right now, there are a couple episodes that I was supposed to edit that I fucking didn't and just posted anyway. So there is definitely, like, at least one episode, if not more, where we're not fucking synced up.
But yeah, so there was that, and then there was just Scott works all the time. I'm, like, constantly having to push through grad school, and I had a part-time over the summer that was keeping me very busy and exhausted. And then just on top of everything else, there was a long time where both of us really stopped playing. I had, like, a game going that was, like, I played, like, 3 sessions of over the course of, like, 4 or 5 months. Scott, you weren't really playing anything for a while, and only, like, recently you picked up again.
Since I moved, I've been playing again because I, you know, moved close to a couple friends that I played with in college and stuff. But there was, like, a long stretch where, like, my only Dungeons & Dragons contact was, like, binging D&D podcasts and, like, listening to every live play that's on Apple Podcasts.
Yeah. So it was this really kind of tricky time where when we first started, we were playing pretty frequently, and Scott had, like, 2 games, mine and somebody else's, I think, and he'd been running games a long time, so he had like, a backlog of things he wanted to say, and I had less so, but I had some of that. But as it went on, and as we got busier, and as we just weren't playing anymore, we were like, what do we talk about? I don't know if I have anything to say, you know? I mean, and we had friends and people who wanted us to dive into things like the Unearthed Arcana articles, because there's obviously just material in the fact that there is material, but, like, we never got to try this stuff out, so I don't know if I necessarily felt comfortable just being like, oh, it's so good. It's like, I don't know. I mean, and then they were releasing books that, like, I couldn't afford to buy, so I was like, I don't know. So there was just all these hurdles, and then as I'm sure everybody realized, you know, we started recording less and less, and then it was, like, once a month, and then it wasn't even once a month, and it was just a wreck. And so I was home recently, and I met up with Scott, and, like, just to put it in perspective, like, I saw Scott and kind of spoke to Scott, and Scott saw his apartment for the first time, like, 2 weeks ago. So, like, we just got totally pulled apart by the geography and our time constraints and stuff like that, and the games just fell apart. And so we talked and we were like, you know, can we afford it? Is it reasonable for us to do? Can we honestly keep any kind of schedule? And we kind of begrudgingly agreed, like, not necessarily. It was getting hard to the point where it wasn't becoming so reasonable. But, you know, in the last couple of months, too, we've been getting, like, nice things. So, a while ago, I don't remember when, I actually think I have it up, wait a minute. We got our first iTunes review in September of 2017, but then it was just, that was the only one. And then, like, what, September 19th, like a few weeks ago, we got another one. So I was like, oh, that's really cool. Like, we got, you know, and like, we would occasionally, I think we didn't get many emails, but we got a couple emails. But like, just recently, we got an email from a listener. I'm not going to say his last name, but his name is Will. Hi, Will. And
hey, Will.
And he sent us like a really nice email, and he had a bunch of questions, and it was like super thrilled to answer them. But he also sent us some. He redid our logo, and he made it look like super dope.
And, yeah, it was like all of a sudden, like we had like a real looking fucking logo.
Yeah, it wasn't just something I not drew that, up on a piece of paper.
Not that your drawing wasn't completely
Scott,
beautiful.
It's amazing. I agree. It was the springboard for great art, which arguably is better than the art, I think. But anyway, no. Will did this amazing logo for us, which we're going to actually switch our logo to his logo because we love the way it looks. And he gave us a bunch of options. It was just like, thank you so much for spending that time. That's amazing. It was such a thrill to receive that, and it was such a high compliment. And I can't thank you enough. And I told Scott, and he was like, no way. I was like, yeah, man, I know. And that was great.
I was like, oh my god, it's like we're a real fucking
it's
podcast.
Like, we're real. And then just like 5 days ago, we got another email from a listener named Hunter who had some really insightful, interesting questions for us in relation to a topic we brought up, God, I don't even know how long ago. And...
Well, here's the thing. With Hunter had... two questions in his email.
Oh, yeah. Well,
or two things,
statements.
Two pieces.
Yeah.
Now, I'm gonna read number one here. and keep in mind that I read this for the first time
ten minutes ago
while Ben and I were talking about ending the show forever.
Yeah.
Hunter's first point is, I love the show so far and want to encourage you guys to keep going at
it. See, Hunter, that hurts.
And, like, Hunter, I appreciate it, but, like, fuck you, dude. That's really heavy to lay on me. I was going to pull the plug here, and now, like, morally, I can't. I feel super guilty about even entertaining the idea of ending the show. So now this episode is going to be all about Hunter. Now, it's going to be about Will, too, because Will made us some dope-ass art, and we really appreciate that, and Will had some really cool questions, and that's kind of what we were always hoping for, right?
Yeah.
Is that you folks would go ahead and shoot us emails, and then that would be the topic for our episodes.
Yeah.
So, now that we do have, you know, those emails with those questions, I'm going to take Hunter's question and super-duper answer it. Now, also, Hunter, if you're listening, expect an email from me with the literal math and spreadsheets that I made for this.
Yeah.
But I'm going to, you know, kind of explain it for all the folks real quickly here. And so Hunter's question is, I've been working on a couple different sorcerer homebrew classes, trying to make exactly what I want for one of my PCs. In our episode about spellcasters, you mentioned how you made a new school or origin that allowed you to select a school of spell, but not the spell itself. I.e. cast an illusion spell, but you don't know what spell it's going to be. And he said it sounded really interesting to him, and I might incorporate it into a session, like a zone where magic is diffused in weird ways. Which, first off, that sounds dope,
yeah.
And I want to be a part of your campaign. That sounds like a blast. Now, what he's referencing is when we were doing spellcasters, we talked about our friend's character, Alistair. And our friend Alex, who actually was a guest a couple episodes ago.
Yeah, that episode, which it's got like four titles, but it ends with "and Alex." That's Alistair. Yeah,
that's Alistair the Confused. And he, when we first started playing, we were playing 3-5, and like I had played one campaign before, and then I was just like, fuck yeah, I can DM.
The arrogance of him was so great.
The hubris. But like the bottom line is, when you're a new DM like that and you don't know, you know, really how to run the outside of the game, the stuff that's not written down, you depend on the rules. And where the rules are the most dense and the most comfortable are in combat. Mm-hmm. So like I ran a shitload of combat when I started, and Alex fucking hated it because there was like eight people. It was 3-5, so like,
oh my God,
you would have 45-minute gaps in between your turns in combat, and so like obviously he lost interest. So we wanted to make he had an idea for a character that would, you know, keep his interest and make things fun, because he was always on the roleplay side of things, and he was always you know, always a little bit meta, always a little bit removed from the fantasy aspect of it, because he's more of a sci-fi guy anyway. So we worked together and we built this character, and there have been many iterations of Alistair the Confused over the years, but, like, the system I have for 5e is, you know, the most recent one.
Yeah.
And essentially the idea is Alistair is this, like, 800-year-old human wizard who is... insane is not the right word, because he has his faculties, but, like, he's spent hundreds and hundreds of years in the astral plane just, like, going slowly mad, and, like, he has little to no control over a lot of his magical casting, and, like, he used to be this world-renowned wizard, and now he's, like, a shadow or a shell of his former self and everything. So the bottom line is, he wanted to be able to cast powerful spells, but, like, not have control over it. So we built a complete random roll chart where it's, you pick the spell class, or the school of magic. So he's a wizard, and so it'll be like, oh, I'm gonna cast an illusion spell. And so then you roll a dice, and it gives you a random illusion spell, which, regardless of what spell slots you have, could be anything from, like, the 9th level illusion weird to, like, the illusion cantrip phantom noise or whatever.
Yeah, Scott, so I don't remember. Did he just have a list of, like, essentially every spell? Or did he cast the level of spell? Could he say, like, I want to cast, like, a 4th level illusion spell? Or did he just say, like, I want to cast... Because the issue we ultimately had, I remember, was that... it was, like, fun, but it was so wildly unpredictable that he wasn't useless, but you had to... well, either it was boring because you kept getting spells that did effectively nothing, or he was so dangerous to himself and those around him that he didn't really want to cast anything at all. So was there a point at which he could cast a level of spell, it just within that sort of realm, or... was it just that the schools are so, well, there's some outliers, but generally speaking, the schools are so tight in what they do that it didn't matter as much? I don't remember how that worked with the power level.
So, like I said, there's been a couple different iterations.
Yeah.
The original 3-5 one was literally, I just made a D100 list of every fucking spell. And that was a goddamn train.
Yeah.
The first iteration in 5e was, as Ben was talking about, based on level. So Alistair would be like, have a number of spell slots on a rough equivalency to a wizard of his level. So, like, if a wizard of his level has, like, you know, 4 level 4 spell slots, he would probably have, like, 5 or 6.
Yeah.
Just because he doesn't actually choose what spells he casts, so it's a little bit of a handicap, so he can cast more often. But the issue we were running in that with was, like, you didn't know if Alistair was going to cast a fireball or, like, mass suggestion.
He blew himself like, up once.
Yeah, you know, he cast a fireball on himself one time and killed almost him, like, killed. Almost TPK.
I had to come in as the DM and, like, sort of metagame everybody's survival, because they were, like, I don't know, like, level, what were you, like, level 3 at that point?
Three or four.
And he cast, like, a 6-level fireball, and it did, like, 70 damage to every, it was, like, nuts. And I, like, was yep. like, well, he made it, so he can live, because he made it. But everybody, and, yeah. like, thankfully, I just happened to have, like, this plot element worked in that I could save everybody, but, like, shit. Like, it was, like, all of a sudden, he almost killed everybody. And it was really out of control. It was very hard.
That was a pretty significant problem. And, like, after that, he did not want mm-hmm. to cast spells anymore because he didn't want that yeah. to happen again. He felt super yeah. guilty yeah, about it, which is, like, totally yeah. fair. So the final kind of iteration of it is to give Alistair or whatever cast you're using this on control in the sense of they can pick the school of magic. Mm. And after that, it is a matter of you roll randomly for every spell within that school of magic. So if you want to cast a illusion spell, you would roll the d20, and there's a list of all 20 illusion spells, or however many illusion spells, right? There's a way I've broken it down that you roll a dice to find out which one you're casting, and that's the spell you're stuck with. But, like, the idea is you have enough
yeah.
wherewithal to understand you're casting it. You just didn't make the choice to pick yeah. that spell. So on spells that are, like, you make an illusion of something, it's not just, like, you cast an illusion spell and you didn't know what it was, so nothing happens.
Yeah.
You actually have, you know, the impulse control to design the illusion, but, like, it's a nice kind of roleplay thing because the players have to be good at improving.
Yeah, absolutely.
They have to be really creative with their spell usage because, like, if you want to do an evocation spell and you want to do, like, you know, a fireball spell, but what you end up getting is, like, create water, you have to use that create water in a very interesting
yeah.
way to make it as useful as that fireball would have
yeah.
been. But there's a way to
oh,
do
yeah.
it.
Oh, yeah. It's a hard thing to do. I mean, and it's something that the game isn't really... I mean, they tried to put it in with, like, the wild magic sorcerer, but even that wasn't as chaotic as this kind of thing. Because it throws balance, like, right out the window. Like, there's no balance to this.
Yeah.
It is all sort of good faith and role-playing that this can work at all. But it's dangerous. It can be really fun. You essentially... As a DM, you can't account for much. Like, you can't really account for any particular baddie being too hard or something. Because, like we said, like, just to compensate for the fact that he was at a tremendous disadvantage to any other kind of spellcaster who has control over what they do and they can make those decisions, we had to give him more spell slots than normal and access to higher level spells than he should reasonably really have. Just so that when he nailed it, he really knocked it out of the park so that it sort of made up for how hard it was to deal with. But you have to kind of just
yes.
say, like, it's going to be crazy. The game will not fall apart because of it. Your game will survive, but you have to really roll with the punches on it. And you have to come up with a way that... you have to just understand you're kind of in a topsy-turvy universe and... You know, like, don't be too hard on the players for any repercussions that they incur because they might explode. And, like, there's not much they can do about it in a random system. And it would be unfair to be taken out by, like, oh, like, I cast, like, I don't know, like, in, well, actually, casting invisibility on your enemy is pretty fun. But I mean, like, if they accidentally, like, you know, poison gas themselves, like, they teleport poison gas in their own lungs. Like, well, I mean, you know, like, maybe give them some slack there, because, like, what are they going to do?
Well, and that's the thing, is, like, I'm looking right now at it, because I just pulled it up, because I have it saved on my computer here, and, like, so enchantment,
yeah.
right? That is a school of magic, and... The spell Charm Person is a first level enchantment spell. the spell Power Word Kill is a 9th level enchantment spell. So, like,
that's a huge
that
difference.
Situation where you're like, I'm going for Charm Person, and I hope I roll on the D100 in the Charm Person thing, and you roll it, and it's just like, Power Word Kill, and it's just like, boom, that card's dead. And you're just like, all of a sudden, it's like, well, the problem is solved. Just not in a great way.
And I mean,
and then having to roll with the punches.
If you want that to be sort of a huge part of your campaign, like, y'all are going to be living in a farce universe full of Goofy Town people, and anything could happen, and you might just kill all the world leaders by accident. Like, you can have that campaign, but it's going to be totally bonkers. I mean, like, cartoon universe crazy. It'll be fun. It's just you have to know that that's what you're getting into, because, like Scott said, they're in the same field. So if you don't have, like, parameters, like, you might end up doing some very severe damage. I mean, the difference between, like, the light spell and some, like, and time stop is not as far apart as you think when you're rolling randomly.
Exactly. Like, illusory scripts, you know, first level make some runes float in the air. But also in the School of Illusion are things like Simulacrum and the spell Weird, which makes people's nightmares come alive and kill them. Like, so you could be like, yeah, this is like essentially equivalent of me manifesting a neon sign, or like Freddy Krueger's about to crawl out of your ear and slit your throat. Both of those have the equal chance of happening. Like, there's no like, oh, it's a higher level spell, there's less chance of it happening. It is, like, perfectly even in regards to, like, your rolls, so it can lead to some fucking craziness.
Yeah, I guess it really just depends on how much chaos you want in your game and how long you plan to have that chaos for, because this kind of thing is, like, super fun short-term. Like, there's no problem short-term. Well, you could create a problem short-term, but there's not going to be, like, an engagement problem and, like, a major narrative problem short-term. Because, like, if it's for 15 minutes and everybody casts, like, almost at random, like, it's going to be bonkers and it might be touch and go, or it might be really, you know, the situation might end itself very quickly. But things will return to normal and there won't probably be much sort of global damage done. But if you plan to run, like, your spellcasters, like Alistair, long-term, you're seeding a lot of chaos into the system, and it's just worth knowing that, like Scott did when he kept revising, like, you have to assess and adjust how much control you need to have over that system. So if you want more or your player wants more, being able to choose power level is a big way to do it while still having that randomness. If they want and you want more chaos, take the power level out of the equation. And if you want, like, just possibly world-ending nonsense, but it'll be a very fun way to go, like, just remove all restrictions and have them roll on that D100. Because, like, they will do anything and everything, and spells that are useless and spells that are way too good. And I think that can be great. I think the risk you run is the risk that we ran with Alex, and the reason that he wasn't so happy at some point is because it's, like, funny, and sometimes it's useful, and if you can be really clever, you can make a lot of things work that wouldn't work. But I remember specifically one of the big issues was, like, in combat especially, if you just keep casting, like, you know, like, identify script, or illusory script, or identify, or you're casting, like, all these, like, bunk-ass, like, kind of useless spells, maybe that hurt your allies, or just don't really let you be engaged with what's happening, then it's really boring for the player. That was the problem with Alex. I remember one combat specifically where everyone was, like, engaged. It was, like, kind of a nothing combat. It was just kind of a hurdle on the way to where they were going. And Alex wanted to cast, like, a damage spell, but he just, like, blinked out of existence for a round. And then he wanted to cast something else, and he ended up casting, I think, like, Suggestion, but it didn't work because the creature didn't speak his language. And it was just, like, he just couldn't do anything. And he was left with, like, beating it with a stick, but he was, like, don't know, he had like a strength score of like, I don't know, 4. Like, I mean, it was like useless. I mean, he had essentially gotten so unlucky that he couldn't really function in the game. And that's not fun.
Yes.
That's not fun. I mean, it's fun, I think, in concept, and it's fun every now and then for a little while, but you will find that that kind of fun wears itself really thin with a player who's not stupid lucky. Because if your player just even rolls pretty average and gets, like, 50% spells that are useful, that's kind of, like, how players feel when they miss, like, 50% of their melee attacks. It's like, I mean, I'm spitting in the wind. Like, I'm not even sure I'm really doing anything of consequence. It's very difficult. So I actually think a little bit of chaos is more fruitful, like the way we ended it with Alex, with the sort of power level, because there's still a lot of options within a specific school and specific power levels. You still have a lot of choices.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing is, like Ben was saying, there was a combat where, you know, Alistair felt totally useless. There was also a combat where he cast Invisibility, Fly, and Fog Cloud on 3 subsequent turns and turned himself invisible and was flying around the battlefield. And, like, in addition to having, like, a Fog Cloud blinding all the enemies, and he was actually, like, super useful in a support way because the rest of the party was just, like, ambushing the shit out of the bad guys. And so, like Ben was saying, it's like the person who misses 50% of their attacks in melee. It's frustrating, and it's like a crapshoot, which is why we built the system, or I guess why I built the system the way it is now, where, like, if you want to cast a damage spell and you go over to the evocation school, you're probably going to cast a damage spell. Like, I'm looking at it right now, and, like, you got, like, a few that aren't going to, like, Continual Flame, Dancing Lights, Darkness. But other than that, like, most of this shit is either, like, fucking damaging spells or, like, huge, like, barriers and walls. It's all, like, combat helpful stuff. So, like, yeah, you got, like, Meteor Swarm and Prismatic Spray and, like, Scorching Ray, Sunbeam, Sunburst, like, Thunderwave, all the walls.
What a dangerous world this is. You know what I mean? Any idiot can cast Prismatic Spray. Ugh.
God.
What a nightmare.
But the bottom line is, it's all about finding the balance.
Yeah,
so
this is going to be a big trial and error.
I'm
going to
be sending this. Yeah, I'm going to send this over your way, Hunter, and I'm going to let you know right now, if this is what you use and you make it instead of the character class, but use it as, like, the area you were talking about, where all of a sudden magic works very differently, keep in mind that, like, it's good to keep that kind of stuff a secret from your players, right? And so what you do is you have, like, oh, my wizard or my sorcerer is going to cast this spell. And so they're like, oh, I want to cast, you know, invisibility. And you're like, oh, well, that's an illusion spell. And then you roll the D100 on the illusion chart. And you're like, actually, instead of invisibility, you cast disguise self. And now you look like a goblin instead of... So now you're still being able to hide from the goblins you're fighting, but you're not invisible.
Yeah.
And, like... Yeah. It makes it seem like you have the reins on tighter than you actually do, because they think you have this whole big plan, but really you're just rolling fucking random shit and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. I think it's one of the cases where,
but no,
where, like, really the DM hiding that information is to everybody's benefit. I mean, some players really don't like when the DM is, like, hiding information, because I guess it makes them feel like they might be fudging something or exerting too much control. But really, I mean, if you can tell them, like, I have a list, and, like, we're going to use that list. Or you just say, like, oh, you went through this magic field and you feel kind of weird. And then when they try to cast a spell, you tell them what they do instead. I mean, I think as long as there's kind of, like, it's not just you sort of inflicting pain upon them like some angry god, and instead you being like, okay, like, part of this castle or part of this dungeon or part of this just, I don't know, magic storm or something, is like there's this weird effect that happens, and when you try to cast, like, this is actually what happens instead. I mean, I think that's a lot of fun. I mean, some players, I'm sure, won't like it, but I think most players would be kind of excited just to be like, oh, that's really weird, and uh-oh.
Well, and also, like, it can be the kind of thing that adds a little spice to a boss battle, because, like, go to point A, beat up guy A, yeah. Go to point B, beat up guy B. It gets exhausting, but, like, when all of a sudden you're like, all right, I'm fighting guy C, and my magic doesn't fucking work the right way anymore, like, it makes it different. It makes the battle feel either more fun, because you have to be, like, on your toes, or it makes the battle feel a lot more serious and intense, and it's that whole thing where it's, like, you shouldn't always have perfectly leveled combat to your party. The best way I've always found is to kind of sporadically jump between, like, all right, this is clearly too hard for them, and then this is super easy. So, like, you'll have a battle that's well above their challenge rating, and they all almost die, or some of them do die, and they get, like, you know, clericked back or whatever, and then all of a sudden they're, like, super fucking afraid of combat, and then you have them fight something that's well below their level, and they just trounce them, and then all of a sudden their confidence is back. So you can, you know, go back and forth that way. And that mimics, like, realism more often, because, like, just because your party leveled up doesn't mean all the guards in the city also leveled up.
I mean, most police officers are, like, not as in shape as they should be. So, you know, they're not out there leveling up.
That was a very Democrat or diplomatic way of saying cops are fat.
Not all cops are fat. There are some cops who are perfectly in shape, but it's just like, I mean, think about like the world that we live in. It's like it doesn't look the way it should, and people don't get tougher just because you did. You know, it's like, and even if they're supposed to be, whatever.
Whoops.
But
and also, there's something to be said for the fact that no matter what you plan, the challenge rating system is janky. So, like, sometimes you'll be like, oh, I have a party of level 8, so I'm going to do a challenge rating 8 enemy. And they just rip it to shreds.
You give them 6 kobolds and they get killed within 3 turns. And you're like, what happened? Why are you dead? And this goes back, I don't want to get into this whole thing again, but we did an episode where we mentioned, like, action economy, which is a phrase that gets floated around. And it has to do with, like, how many turns and actions a player or the players have versus how many turns and actions the enemies have, and how having more actions is a larger factor in victory than more hit points or higher AC or hitting harder, just because it's like
battlefield
it's battlefield manipulation. It's having the opportunity to, I mean, in a game that's essentially turn-based, even though it's supposed to, all the actions are supposed to happen simultaneously in the 6-second period, it's like, because of initiative, you know, you can take a big enemy if your initiative is in your favor. Your team can take a big enemy down from full health to, like, crippled at the ankles to, before that enemy even gets to have their turn. So, but if you have more enemies to equalize the field, even if they're smaller enemies, you can mitigate some of that damage because the attention is distracted. But yeah,
I mean, and I think 5e's one solution to that was a very elegant solution on the D&D creative team's kind of side. There was the legendary actions.
Yeah,
and lair
that was
actions.
Smart. That did
I
equalize
think
the field.
The legendary and lair actions perfectly balance it because they're situational, right? The DM chooses when to use them, which allows for, you know, leaning more on them when things are going against the DM's favor, and leaning less on them when things are going against the party's favor, and kind of using that to manipulate the flow of battle and make it seem a lot more exciting and a lot more close, because you can essentially wipe the action economy advantage
out. It's a good feature. I like it. I haven't had enough chances to use it because I haven't, again, been playing enough with characters high enough level that they're fighting enemies that have, like, legendary actions, because those tend to be for, you know, pretty significant monsters and stuff. But, do you want to talk about the other Will's question, too, as long as we're on it? Because I answered it personally, but it might be valuable to everybody else, too.
Listen, Ben, yeah. Ben, this is a DM advice podcast by rookie DMs for rookie DMs. So if we have questions, we should fucking answer them, Ben, because that's our goddamn job.
I'm still on this. Like, Scott and I were talking about, like I said, we were ready to kill this thing just because it was not super practical for us. And then I checked the email just so we could thank Will. I was like, oh, I can't remember what the guy's name was. So I went on and I saw the other email. I was like, God damn it, Scott, we got another one. So we were like, we have to discuss this and maybe we'll just do it on air. But anyway, so Will's question was in a totally different direction, though we kind of brushed on it momentarily when we were just talking. So he was DMing for the first time, actually, not that long ago. It was last week, maybe 2 weeks ago at the most. So, Will, I hope it all went well. I hope your players enjoyed themselves, and I hope that the answer I gave you was informative enough.
If he listens to our podcast, it went great. And we know it did, because we give the best advice.
All right. Okay. You're right. We're the best. Just look at our iTunes reviews.
Self-promotion, man.
Five stars.
iTunes.
The question that Will had, questions, had to do with animal companions and pets. And so I was actually trying to remember this. I didn't want to sift through all the old material, but once upon a time, when we started playing 3.5, animal companions and pets and things like that were pretty common. Like, rangers had them. Druids had them. Did anybody else have them by default? Wizards had familiars, so they were kind of in that field in some sense.
There was a prestige class of sorcerer, wizard, or something where you could be a summoner.
Right.
And you could do essentially that, but with demons and skeletons and shit for a necromancer.
But I think there was just two, like, I don't know.
Two standard versions was paladins and druids, or rangers and druids. But the problem was, the way they did it in 3.5 was, it was a whole nother turn.
Yeah.
Like, you got to play two goddamn characters.
And this made a lot of, like, technical sense. It's like, well, yeah, I mean, they're two different entities. They don't move at the same time. And, like, they're going to do different stuff. But the problem with that was, anybody who had a pet, their turn took anywhere between like 2 and 4 times longer than everybody else, and because the turns in that game were already pretty long, it was really, really long. I mean, we're talking like 40 minute turns sometimes. So it was not everybody's favorite, even though everybody liked it, because like, who doesn't want to have like a sweet pet? But it just didn't, it was such a pain.
Well, I had one of my players, one of my usual players in college, was a huge fan of that. And he was also a huge fan of character building. It was his favorite part of the process. So he would, even when he already had a character with no intention of replacing them, just build characters in his free time because it was something that he liked to do. He explored all the books. He built all these like different weird combinations. And he figured out how to multi-class like Ranger, Druid, Beastmaster, where he had 3 goddamn animal companions at like level 11. So we were playing a campaign, and he got 4 turns for every 1 turn of anyone else, because he had like a lion, a tiger, and a bear as his animal companions.
I'll pick you up. I'll pick you up.
I appreciate that. But like, and like, I am not saying that that was not a dope ass character. It was a really
but it was kind
cool
of a
character,
selfish character,
but,
right? Like, it demanded most of the game time, right?
Exactly. And if it's like, for those of you who listen to Drunks and Dragons, when Nika Howard first joined the podcast, some of you might have noticed what she does is like, she's very much, or at least when she first started, she was very much like a 3-5 player, and she would pre-roll her attacks and damage before it got to her turn. So around in combat, when her turn was up, she had the results of her rolls, and she would be like, did an 18 hit? Yes? Okay, then I did 16 damage. Did a 24 hit? Yes? Okay, then I did 19 damage. Did a 3 hit? No? Okay, then that's it. And so she would have those numbers ready, right? She would already have rolled them, which if you have that many animal companions doing that and you have your whole plan out, that would be fine. But when it's just like, oh man, we're playing with 6 other people and so it's still like 45 minutes in between my turns and I get distracted and now I have to like figure out 5 different actions to do all of a sudden, it's super rough.
Yeah. So the reason I'm going in to this, and talking about like the old rules is because they streamline them in the new in 5e. So like, if you're a ranger as a pet, because I think rangers are the only ones that get the pets. I think the druids just have wild shape now. If the rangers have the pets, either the animal's taking a turn or you're taking a turn with like a little bit of like maybe there's some bonus action you can do if the you know like there's a little bit of wiggle room but not very much. So it's kind of one or the other, which has really put a pretty significant dent in the potency of that. And there's a kind of, like, if it's weird that, like, you would just stand there while, like, the tiger goes and does something, or vice versa. Like, why would you both not do something? But it is very much a mechanical issue to solve this problem, that it just, the time it took was kind of too much.
Well, that's the thing, is, like, you can use your bonus action to have the companion move, and you can move, and then you could give it one of your attacks.
Oh, if you
so
get
if
multiple
you get
attacks,
two attacks a turn,
then
your animal can have one. But I think one of the big problems with that one, I know this is another digression, but like, the animal companions, they're mundane animals, and as you level up, the animals don't have like a system for that, really.
Yeah.
So the idea is you get a new animal companion as you get a higher level. So it's basically just like you get this pet, and then you're just like, you know what? I'm gonna buy a stronger pet. Fuck you, original pet. And no one feels that way. So like all of a sudden you're just like, well, like when I was level 2, this bear was fucking dope, but now I'm level 12, and this bear dies every time it sees a single enemy.
Yeah.
So like I don't know what to do.
Yeah, there might be some level mechanic. I haven't looked into it too much as I should have. There's ways to do it, and I think you know. Push comes to shove, you can always just take the stats of a similar but stronger monster and sort of, you know, like, yeah, just kind of Mad Libs over it. But Will's question was more to do with, like, how do you run a pet? So one of his players had a pet wolf, and he wanted to know any advice on how to run it. Should the player control it? Should Will control it? Should it be some weird combination of her giving orders and then the wolf following based on a charisma check, like an animal handling check or something? And then there was also a secondary thing about, like, he wouldn't... Is it right that, like, he said he wouldn't try to kill the animals in particular, but he wasn't going to go out of his way to save them if bad things happen like he would with a player? So with the first question, I think I said this, but just for the benefit of all, I'm always under the impression that, like, it's the player's animal. Like, it's not my place to step in and say what the animal does. But I wasn't sure exactly what he meant. And I addressed this in the email. I said, if this, then this, if this, then this. Because I don't think they're called pets in 5e. I think they're, like, animal companions.
If it was not a ranger
that's,
animal,
that's what I was thinking.
Right?
So ranger animal.
If this person was
a rogue. So any character could have a pet because like any person can have a pet and train a pet. Like that's not outlandish. But I said, if this is a ranger or some other class that has managed to get, like, a designated sort of linked animal companion, then it's very much in their control. Like, they're going to decide. There's almost, like, a psychic link there. It's at least extremely well-trained. And they can decide what to do with it at their will. And I don't see any reason for the DM to step in on that territory unless the player asks for some reason, or if, like, an enemy had some kind of mind-affecting effect on that animal companion. Yeah. But if it was a pet, and also with that, I felt like ranger companions get a lot of kind of specialty abilities and skills and things like that that regular just animals don't have. They're really well trained. They can do a lot of things. They're kind of smarter. They can communicate to some degree. If it was just a pet, like, it's like, oh, my character just loves dogs and, like, it's going to have a beagle, then, like, combat beagle. Then corgis with amounts of fairies. But if that's the case, if it's really like a pet in the traditional sense, then it's going to be much more limited in its abilities, in its training potential. I think so. I mean, you can just.
I draw a harder line than you do. Line? If that's a pet in the traditional sense, and you do not have an ability, like if you homebrew animal companion into a different class and eliminate an equivalent ability, like if you want to be a rogue with an animal companion, you got to take away sneak attack from that rogue.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's a big deal. Having that animal companion in combat is a huge fucking boon. So if you're just someone with a pet, I hardline that it is does nothing in
combat. What I essentially said is that's a good point. I mean, that's smart thinking. It's smart thinking. I think what I was more getting at with my response to that was I wouldn't count on a pet to be a reliable sort of almost like another character. I would think of it more like, you know, if you got a dog like a bloodhound, like it'll be pretty good at tracking in a way that you wouldn't necessarily. But like, you really, I don't think can extend it very much beyond like an extremely normal animal. And if like the going gets rough, like dogs run away, cats run away, they don't do what they're told, the training goes back. And depending on what kind of animal it is, like if it's a pet that you raised but isn't domesticated, like in this case a wolf or a gorilla or something, because you can get some crazy shit, there's a real chance. I mean, even domesticated animals can do this, but wild animals, even if you train them and they're from birth, they're with like a handler, like they can revert to their feral instincts in certain situations with certain stimuli in the face of extreme danger and surprise, hunger. Like, it's a very real possibility with a pet that's not specifically an animal companion or a ranger or similar class, like you said, that the pet won't listen, will run away, will attack you, will just won't do what you say. And it's, so there's a real risk there. And I think if you're going to play a pet as a pet, you have to consider that this is not a creature that is in any way bound to your player beyond just like, oh, it likes me.
I gave it food and a collar and a name, and I bought it at a store.
And now it follows me around because I smell a little bit like raw chicken.
There you go. I mean, like...
Yeah, so that's... The loyalty's pretty rough there. I mean, I would say over a long period of time, you can, you know, make them a little more reliable, but I don't think you could ever really weed out that kind of animalistic sense.
But here's the thing I will say about that. I agree wholeheartedly. I think that having a mundane pet is a RP character choice. It should not show up in combat, period. Because I think that's too much of a bonus. That's too much. Unless you're going to eliminate an ability, I think it's too much of a boost. So
it can be.
What I would suggest is, as I said, like if you're a rogue and you want an animal companion, you have to eliminate sneak attack or some major ability. And the reason being is, like, to get your animal companion to the point where it will listen to you in combat and take your commands and be useful to you in that regard, that is hours and hours and hours of training. So instead of learning how to be a sneak attacker, person and learning how to do this, perform the sneak attack, you spent that time, presumably, training your animal. So that's kind of how I think about it in a real-world RP sense, is like, oh, here is this ability that I am going to sacrifice for the sake of having an animal companion, because, I have to put, you have to put the time into it. The other thing would be, if you're playing with feats, I know technically, I didn't realize this until recently, but technically feats are an optional rule.
Yeah.
They're in an optional 5e.
Rule. You can take them in place of
but they're
like stat boosts.
Exactly. And I found out that there are GMs that do not use feats and only allow for stat boosts, which is, you know, run the game how you like, whatever. But that would be an excellent idea for a homebrew feat, animal companion, right? So that would be something that's like, you know, you take the animal companion, and at level 4, when you get your stat booster feat, you get to go ahead and take that animal companion feat. Now, if they...
But, like, whatever the next stage of, like, major character, like, the next major ability, like, you would just do that in place of...
Exactly. Now, if they are playing a ranger, the rules are pretty, you know, laid out in the handbook and whatnot. In regards to the idea of the animal handling check or the GM or DM controlling the animal, I agree with Ben wholeheartedly. I think if it's a formal animal companion, i.e. the rules of the game, like, that's totally the player. That's an extension of the player. They're playing not only their character, but they're playing their character and their animal companion. So it's, you know, still their role play. I would say animal handling checks with an animal companion would be an interesting hurdle to throw at the party in the case of, like, extreme danger. For example, if your animal companion is a polar bear, it's a big fuck-off polar bear, right? That's a huge animal. And you have to walk on one of those, like, tiny fuck-off rope bridges above a big chasm. That would probably take an animal handling check to get that bear on that bridge. like, even if it's, like... Yeah. The smarter the bear, right, the harder it would probably be to get that bear on there, because that bear's going to be like, no, that's not going to hold my weight. I'm going to fucking die. I don't want to be a part of this. And you're going to be like, no, bear, it's cool, dude. We'll get across the bridge. And the bear's like, nah. Yeah.
Just another reason why Tensor's Floating Disc is a great spell.
500 pounds is not as much as you'd think. I do not think a polar bear... I think a polar bear wears, like, at least 800, but I think more than that.
No, I don't... If I weighs more... An average adult male lion's weigh like 420 pounds or something like that. I just looked this up for some other reason.
Yeah, just for your own personal research. Why did you can't bury the lead like that. Why did you look up how much adult male lions weigh?
I saw a Facebook video of a lion and lioness like greeting, I guess, a guy who had like raised them and released them into the Serengeti or something, and they found him and they like ran into hugs with him, but I was like, man, that is a very big animal. And I was like, how much poundage is coming at this guy? And the lioness, like, I think their average is like something like 380 or 320 or something like that. And the male lions have like, it's like over 400 pounds on average. I was like, Jesus Christ, that's a lot of cat.
My cat is 8 pounds and we're pretty sure he's done growing. He has been 8 pounds the entire time we've had him. It's almost a year now.
I call my cat Pudge Truck because she's so big.
Oh, good.
But anyway, what was I talking about? Oh, yeah. So the pets and their sort of loyalty and so on and so forth. I agree with you, and I said this in the email too, that I think if the wilder the animal, the more control you as the DM can exhibit over its behaviors. I think with, like, minor things, like, oh, like, I feed it. It's like, oh, it rolls over. It's like, yeah, fine. It rolls over. Like, whatever. But when it comes to, like, asking it to perform tasks or trying to communicate information to it or just, like, just general behaviors in the face of, like, different stimuli that the player isn't necessarily, like, making any calls on, you know, like, oh, like a stranger comes around and it's like the player's like, oh, I wait. It's like, yeah, but maybe the panther doesn't wait, you know, like maybe the panther is a little less reserved. So things like that. And especially, I mean, it's not even like just big animals, like you can get bats as pets.
Yeah.
But it's like, I don't know how easy it is to train a bat, you know, like they're pretty wild animals, and so like you'd really have to keep that thing in like a cage or on a leash to have it not leave all the time. But
or keep a lot of grubs in your pocket.
Maybe keep a lot of grubs in your pocket. That might be helpful and disgusting, which is great character stuff. If your character just always has a pocket full of grubs.
Oh yeah.
It's to keep all my bats. Oh yeah, no, I trust you. I absolutely trust you as a companion. But yeah, so I think the wilder the animal and the further away it is from that animal companion, the more DM control I think I would say is fine to exhibit, just because it makes sense. At some point, it's closer to an NPC than it is a player.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, and the second part of the question is about. You know, he wouldn't attempt to kill the animals anymore, but he also wouldn't attempt to save them anymore the way he might kind of narratively intervene to save a player's life. And do we have anything to say about that and any pet stories of our own? And I want to say what I said to him. And that's, I think it's absolutely right that he should make no extended effort to save the pets or the companions when they are, I think, the sole responsibility of the player to handle and keep care of. And if they want to bring Fluffy into combat, that was their own stupid decision.
Yeah, there's a lot of responsibility with having your first pet. You have to feed it, you have to walk it, you have to take care of it, and you have to keep it away from sharp, pointy objects like swords and spears.
Yeah, and the D&D world is basically nothing but sharp objects.
Yeah,
so
the TV show.
Having a pet in the game is like cute and fun, and it is also probably the most emotionally stupid thing a player can do.
Oh my god.
And Here's the sort of big issue you'll find with players who take animal companions most of the time. I mean, not everybody's going to be like this, but I would say a lot of people who take this do it because they just love animals so damn much and they love the idea of pets, is that they are going to care more about that animal than they're going to care about their companions, your campaign, or themselves. I guarantee at some point, if you give that player long enough, or maybe not even long enough, if you threaten that animal with, like, oh, you're in a fight with a bunch of, hobgoblins or bugbears or something, and one of them comes running at the pet and, like, throws a knife at it, your player will stop what they're doing and use a reaction to leap in front of that knife with their own body, even if it means they die, just because they cannot stomach the thought of the animal getting hurt, let alone killed. So you have this weird thing where they want the pet, and they're an incredible boon to a player in and out of combat, but like it's like if you own a pet, you don't want it to get hurt. So they're going to go out of their way to make sure this thing is like as safe as possible, and get the level of fury involved with a player's pet getting hurt and the depths of revenge they will plot to get back at whoever hurt their pet is insanity. So just be prepared that, like, this will become, in a number of cases, your player's, like, top priority.
Well, I mean, yeah, that, and the other thing is, you know who's the smartest dog in the world?
Lassie?
My dog. In the sense of, like, no, not
your dog.
Not literally my dog. My dog's a fucking moron.
Jada's not that smart.
Jada's super dumb. No, but, like, everyone believes that their pet is the cutest, the smartest, the bestest, the most amazing. So, like, that transfers over to D&D, where everyone will overestimate their animal companion.
Oh,
and
God.
They will have, you know, a challenge rating 2 mundane grizzly bear, and they'll be like, yeah, we could fight a bunch of fucking orc red fangs. That won't be a problem. And then they'll kill the shit out of the bear because they're challenge rating 8 and it's a challenge rating 2. And, like, the person will be like, well, what the hell? How'd they kill my bear so fast? And be really mad about it. And it's like, well, maybe you shouldn't have had your bear charge enemies that are going to be tough for, like, even you to fight.
Yeah. So I think it's one of those things where, if a player's going to have it, and I think this is more advice to players than DMs, because this isn't your responsibility, but to players, if you are really dead set on having an animal companion, or, God forbid, a pet that is just going to hopefully tag along for the ride, you might have to think about it in a way that is more, less akin to how we think about animals and pets now, and more akin to the way that we once upon a time thought about a number of animals. It's more maybe a beast of burden and a living tool than it is like your pride and joy in this thing that you just breastfed, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's I think, you know, it's not nice, it's not pleasant, but when you think about people who do like fox hunting or something, like they're perfectly aware that foxes fight back and sometimes dogs get gouged or there's like mountain lions around or something like that and the dog could just die. Like, and it's not that it's not sad, but you kind of go in with the knowledge that you bred, raised, and use a dog for hunting. Like, it's just like it's another tool that you're using to enact a thing. And it's not like a nice way to think about it, but it's going to be very hard to bring anything you love into a dangerous situation. You're going to find, you may end up in this position of kind of neutrality anyway, just by virtue of, you'll have to change your thinking if you ever want to really do it again. Like, if one animal dies, you'll be like, I can't care about the second one, because if I do, I'm never going to want to bring it anywhere.
Yeah.
So, it's tough. It's a tough one.
So, bringing it all back in.
Yeah.
To summarize, we were going to kill the podcast. Y'all guilted us into keeping it alive. We're going to have to figure out the logistics of that in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, but we don't know how we're going to do this. I mean, it's not like a huge burden financially, but Scott and I need money.
Oh my God,
so it's like a huge pain in the ass.
And I refuse to do the Patreon thing. Like, I understand that that's what Patreon is for, but like, I don't think we're like Patreon level yet. Like, we're not bringing joy to millions of people's lives.
No, I know. I mean, I understand your hesitation. I think it's like there's something very like, I don't mind like asking for the help, but I also, if there's something that feels very arrogant about it, like, hey, like, you should pay for this. Like, we did this because we really wanted to just be like, Here's a thing for people who need it. Like, this is not a capitalistic venture for us. This was just something that we, like we've said a million times, we were doing it anyway. We figured somebody would get some use out of it. And frankly, I mean, we have gotten more attention than I ever thought. I mean, I think we've crossed at this point. Let me check here. We have more, you know, listens than I thought we were gonna get. We have over 6,000 listens total for a year, and I was happy. I was like, if we get 500 listens, I'll be stoked. And I was like, oh, now we're up to like almost 6,500 listens, which, I mean, in the grand scheme of like large podcasts is not that much, but for me that's like 100 times what I thought was gonna happen, right? Yeah. And all the videos have like 150 or more listens, and now, you know, some people email us now and again, and we get a couple iTunes reviews, and it's something that we enjoy doing. It's not necessarily easy for us to do right now, but it's something we enjoy doing, but it was just becoming like, with all the other burdens of doing it at such a distance from each other with kind of hit or miss internet connection, and then just the fact that like, we were spending money that we don't necessarily have to keep it running, and then we just weren't doing it on top of it. It was a difficult thing. I don't know. I mean, I don't... I am open to Patreon. I'm hesitant.
Well, here's,
but I see it as a method. Like, it's one of those things, like, if we're gonna do it, I would like to do it just as a dump back into the podcast. Like,
well, yeah.
You could buy microphones that aren't shitty, like my computer microphone is really shitty. And
yeah.
And just that we wouldn't have to pay out of pocket for the hosting fees, which again aren't all that much, but just we don't have a lot right now. Scott, well, especially is paying for rent and things like that, so
that's a discussion me and Ben can have in private at a later date.
Yeah.
But right, yeah. Now what the plan for the future is, we are going to stop paying SoundCloud money, which means we are going to severely limit the amount we can post online. That being said, we are going to keep the Twitter up. We're going to keep the Dungeon Caster SoundCloud page up. We're going to keep the email up. So we're going to keep this episode and however other many, we'll pick some of the best ones and put them up.
Yeah.
And so I think like SoundCloud for free limits you to like 3 hours of content.
Something like that.
So we'll have like 3 hours, so probably like this episode and two others up. And if you want, if you listen to this and this is the first time listening to our podcast and you're like, where the heck is all the other content? You can email us at dungeoncasterspodcast@gmail.com and we will just send you our entire back catalog. That's kind of going to be our plan.
It doesn't matter to us. I mean, it's, again, we wanted people to use it and we wanted people to enjoy it. And we just thought it was like, well, what we have, we might as well offer. So, I mean, if you want it, it's not sacred to us. Like, we'll make a copy of the files and you can have them.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal.
So that being said, even if we do, if this ends up being a hiatus, another hiatus, we're going to keep the email open. We're going to keep the Twitter open. And I think, I don't know if this will be the end of the podcast aspect of Dungeon Casters, but I know for certain Dungeon Casters is going nowhere. Regardless of if it just ends up being like me answering your questions via email for the next 5 years, Dungeon Casters will still exist in some kind of format.
Yeah.
But for now, we're just, you know, trying to figure out what our future is going to be. And like I said, this is kind of, we're figuring this out as we're recording this episode because we were going to pull the plug and I just can't do it. I feel too guilty. Folks emailed us and asked us questions and reviewed us on iTunes or Apple Podcasts or whatever the fancy people call it. So if you ever need me to do anything, if you just email me and give me attention, apparently it just guilts me right into it. So there's a little tidbit for y'all.
So weak. Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, we'll keep the email open. I check it now and again. And I'm perfectly happy to keep correspondence with anybody who's got questions, who's interested. I enjoy doing it. If I don't know, I don't know. And if I think Scott knows, I'll defer to Scott if he hasn't seen it. And we'll provide what we can. And as Scott's now playing more games, I'm about to plan some things maybe. We'll see. I don't know what my time's looking like, but I have at least reason to keep sort of diving into it again, so we'll see what happens. So hopefully we have some more things to say, but if you want to contact us, by all means contact us. I understand that when our sort of last month runs up and it just comes down to like whatever 2-3 episodes we still have up, like this episode will kind of not make a lot of sense. And why would you email people who you haven't really heard before? But, again, it's going to be up for a little while, so hopefully whoever wants to find it will find it in the time frame. And it's, like we said, it's open. It's if you want the stuff, just let us know. You can have the stuff. If you just found it, if you're finding this 2 days before the end of our last month, which I don't know when it...
October 2018 is going to be our last month that we're paying for.
Yeah, so if you like find this on October like 29th and you just obviously don't have enough time. I mean, the first, and you probably wouldn't listen to this one first, but if by chance you do, my suggestion would be just download them straight from SoundCloud so you don't even have to go through emailing us for all
or
that.
Or Apple, you can download them right off Apple Podcast.
Yeah,
I
mean,
the whole fucking catalog and then we're good.
Yeah, just download the whole thing wherever you want to download it from. But if you don't want to download, you want to listen to it, just let us know. We'll send you what you need to get. And God, interesting, huh?
Yeah.
What a big one. I thought it was going to be this like 10-minute thing that we're just like, hey, like, you know, and now we're like over an hour and it's not dying. I don't know.
What's going on? Everything is gonna be okay, Ben. And you know why? Because this is the first episode that I do not have a dad joke to end with.
Oh shit, what?
So we're not ending with a dad joke.
Because there's this nothing is a, funny.
There's about nothing this. Funny about this fucking episode.
Yeah, no, this is all, a funeral.
But in all seriousness, we're going to try to keep it alive. We're going to do what we can to rededicate ourselves to this and try to make it work. Even if that's, you know, a little ways down the line, that's fine. We're going to we'll be back if we're not going if we're going anywhere. But remember, if you need us, you can always email us at our Gmail account, which is dungeoncasterspodcast@gmail.com.
Yep, and we're still on Twitter, though not too actively, at dungeon_casters. And on iTunes, with our blessed little reviews, at Dungeon Casters. Is it Dungeon? It's just Dungeon Casters, right? It's just Dungeon Casters under the podcast tab.
I think I need to fix that. Because why? I found out, so when you type in Dungeon Casters podcast, it's hard to find us.
Well, I always just type in Dungeon Casters.
Does it get to us?
Yeah, it does.
Okay, yeah. Well, never mind.
You just have to go under the pod. And now it just knows that I'm looking for podcasts. But when you go to iTunes, if you type in Dungeon Space Casters, and you go to the sidebar, and there's tabs for audiobooks, albums, songs, movies, TV shows. There's one that's specifically for podcasts. If you click that, you will see us. We're much more at the front if you go through that channel. But it's not like you can just look up Dungeon Casters and we'll show up, because there's a whole bunch of stuff that's way more popular than we are with those words already in them. So, yeah, go to podcasts, Dungeon Space Casters, podcast tab. We're there.
All right.
All right, man. Well, I'll talk to you, and we'll talk to you, everybody, eventually. Maybe. Email us.
In this podcast, we used Achilles and News Sting by Kevin MacLeod of Accompetech.com, licensed under Creative Commons.